From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Thursday when Puerto Rico's Department of Education announced it will close nearly a third of its public schools due to low enrollment. Nearly 40,000 students have left the island with their families, seeking relief after Hurricane Maria ravaged Puerto Rico last September. And now education leaders are hoping to save money on public schools by closing those buildings and opening charter schools and initiating voucher programs. The move is the latest in a series of efforts designed to help speed up recovery efforts on the island. NPR reported last month 11% of Puerto Rico at least is still without power, about 6 months, closing in on 7 months after the storm. And this raises concerns among FEMA officials as the new storm season draws close. That is something we have to keep in mind here. We're not that far away from the next hurricane season. This hour, we re-examine what's going on in Puerto Rico. Sometimes media coverage of disasters or tragedies will sort of peter out a few weeks or a month later, but we have a continuing commitment on Connections to understanding the crisis there. And my guests include local students who have helped with cleanup efforts and local leaders with ties to the island who have welcomed Puerto Rican families that moved to Rochester. Joining us in studio, Hilda Rosario Escher is back, president of the Ibero-American Action League. Nice to see you in studio. How are you?
Great to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
Very good to have you. Betsy Colon is here, Grants Management Associate at SUNY Geneseo, as part of a group that was there for how long, Betsy?
We were there a week during spring break in March.
And very good to have you. Thank you for
Thank
being
you,
here.
Thank you, Evan.
A couple of students. Bree Pollard is a senior chemistry major at SUNY Geneseo, who was part of the Livingston Cares team, which did that hurricane relief work in Puerto Rico. Bree, welcome to the program.
Yep, thank you for having me.
And Mike Wall is a senior international relations major at SUNY Geneseo, who is also part of the Livingston Cares team. Mike, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Hilda, let me start with you, because the last time I talked to you, you actually were in Puerto Rico. And now here you are in Rochester. And give me a snapshot for how many families that we at least are pretty aware of that have moved from Puerto Rico to the Rochester area. How are things going here with that?
We have had about 2,500, but that does not count a lot of families that have moved, that have not come to our center. We are still working to resettle like 400 families.
Wow.
So, yes.
And what's the most difficult part of doing that?
The most difficult part is finding housing and transportation. Because they come and, you know, basically they don't know where they are. And the other difficulty is the weather, you know. So we have spring coming up, so hopefully they'll...
Allegedly.
Absolutely. At some point, it will get here.
Well, and I know our listeners, as we go throughout the hour, are going to be wondering what they can do to help. There's a couple of things coming up here. But let me just start by asking you, in particular, if you want to help with families... Do families need transportation help? They need places to stay? What do you need most?
The families that we're working with now, they need security deposits for their apartments. So that is a big issue. And furniture.
Okay, so those are two big ones.
Those are two big ones. Transportation, we use Uber.
You use an Uber, okay.
Well... Yeah, I am. They come to the center and then I call Uber and send them back to their hotel or
shelter. Who's covering the bills for that? Ibero?
Yeah.
Okay. So you need money for... you are. Let's be honest here. Who's covering the bill? You're covering the bills.
For Uber, I am.
Personally?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are some ways that you can help. And if you wanted to get in touch with Ibero-American Action League, how do people get a hold of you?
They can call 256-8900, extension 632.
Do it again.
256-8900, extension 632.
Hilda, when it comes to the way we cover these kind of disasters, you know, it's easy to move on. There's a lot of other things happening in the world. How would you say the island is doing? I mean, this is the most devastating natural disaster to hit Puerto Rico. How would you say, from your understanding of what's happening there now, how are things going?
I don't think that they are doing well, because the center of the island still don't have electricity or running water. But in addition to that, a lot of people don't have jobs, because a lot of small businesses and even other industries have left Puerto Rico, and the small businesses, a lot of them are gone.
This is the kind of disaster that is going to have ripple effects that last a long time, isn't
it? Right. And in addition to that, you know, some of the schools are still closed. So families that come here, what I'm noticing is that they are coming from the center of the island now. And the reason is because they don't have jobs. Their home were destroyed, and because the kids don't have the schools.
Let me turn to Betsy Colon. Why don't you tell me about the group that you were a part of, what it's composed of, and what the mission was?
Evan, I represent the Livingston Cares Program at SUNY Geneseo. This initiative was taken in 2005, and it truly consists of college and community folks, students, alumni, community members involved, our private government educational agencies, such as SUNY Geneseo, Livingston County Chamber of Commerce, the County Coalition of Churches, the government and town and village of Geneseo. And SUNY Geneseo agreed to coordinate the administrative Livingston Cares on campus. And that's headed by Tom Matthews, who's been there 50 years, and he's done an exceptional job. But Livingston Cares' mission is to get out into the community, locally, regionally, statewide, nationwide, and it's all about humanitarian projects. So to date, we have sent out close to 60 service trips. What I mean by these service trips is groups of student, alumni, parents, faculty, administrative staff. We go and we help physically at our own expense, and that's something important to note, that we pay for our own trips to go. The college does not support that. And we go to different parts who have been devastated by hurricanes. So this year we've gone to Puerto Rico, Houston, Texas, Florida, Biloxi. This is our 40th trip to Biloxi. We've been going consistently since 2005.
Remarkable.
So with that, the Hurricane Sandy, this is our 15th trip. And I'm throwing out these numbers of trips because the commitment with Livingston Cares is long-term. It's not just a one-stop service trip and we're out of there. The commitment is long-term. Most of these disasters are in the recovery period, so this is where we can go and make a difference. And it's actually the hands-on experience and seeing the level of devastation that's important to so many, connecting with the people there and coming back and learning about what it is to be able to survive such a hurricane or things like that. Aside from domestic, internationally, Livingston Cares assists financially projects like in Haiti, Japan, things of international devastation. So it's a big mission that we're all very committed to. So our group was asked to go to Puerto Rico for the first time. And I was contacted by Tom Matthews to be a team leader because I have family in Puerto Rico. And I said, absolutely. So for the first time, a SUNY Geneseo team went in March.
How many?
10. 7 students and 3 adults.
Went for about a week?
Yes, okay. During spring break.
And I want to ask you, when you mentioned 40 trips to Biloxi, for example, in the last 13 years.
Yes.
This is exactly what I was talking about a moment ago with Hilda. We can think about a hurricane, the disaster, and what category it was. You know, Eric Holthaus, who writes for Grist as a meteorologist, reporting recently that they have confirmed that it was a high-level Category 4. We can fix it on the storm itself, but it is often years of damage and devastation. Now, every community is different. Biloxi is not San Juan, but at the same time, I think there's something instructive here to find out 40 trips to Biloxi since 2005, since Katrina. What have you noticed? What's the story there? What's been the challenge of recovery, and what is going well?
I believe from what I've learned, and this is my first service trip through Livingston Cares, it is an ongoing. It is the people who suffer, whether it be through anxiety, depression, so many other things because they have lost their homes. And while I don't have the facts, I can only speak on my little glimpse of what I saw in Puerto Rico, it is the opportunity to be able to connect face-to-face with people and share in that suffering. And while we're only there a week, we know that at least we offered what we could. And the commitment to Katrina, obviously that was in 05. They still struggle.
13 years later.
And
amazing.
We're still there. And that's what matters. We're still there.
All right, so let me turn to the students then. Bree Pollard is a senior chemistry major at SUNY Geneseo. Your first trip to Puerto Rico on this trip, is that right?
Yes, it was.
Where did you guys go specifically?
We went to Patillas, which is in the southern part of Puerto Rico.
Okay, so you fly to San Juan?
Yes, we flew to San Juan, and I think it was about an hour and a half drive down.
What did you expect to see, and what did you end up seeing?
So what the information we were given, because it was kind of like a last-minute type of organized deal, since like all the chaos that was going down there, we didn't know what to expect at all. Tom Matthews told us that we might be sleeping on pews, we might be sleeping in tents, and then we actually got there, and we were living in a lovely retreat house right on the ocean, actually. So it was much different than I actually expected. And we got to live basically right with the locals, which was a great opportunity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what did you see in terms of infrastructure? How are the roads? How's power? All of that.
Yep. So the power, definitely, you could tell they were in different places. They were rebuilding the lines. So a lot of places did have power, or a lot of places had power. A lot of places didn't have power. It definitely varied. And the roads, they were constantly fixing the roads, digging up the roads. Yes.
Did it look like there had been a storm a week ago, a month ago? Did it look largely, quote unquote, back to what you would expect normal to look like?
No, it looked like the storm had just happened with the repairs they were doing.
Amazing. We're talking 6+ months later. By the way, Puerto Rico on day 201 today since the hurricane that devastated Puerto Rico. More than 100,000, up to 150,000 people still without power. That's 6 to 11% of Puerto Rico. Tens of thousands of people still without clean water. And for them, you can understand, this is still a humanitarian emergency. What about housing and structures? What did you see there?
So we were on the southern part of it. So we weren't in the central part of Puerto Rico. So it was definitely much different than what was described for the central part. But the houses were actually made of concrete, which made our work a little bit different. So we weren't necessarily like rebuilding like wood. What we did was more, I guess, replacing roofs, but nothing that we would see in America, which was very interesting.
Reading that report from Eric Holdhouse in Grist, he's mentioning that, you know, there are still a number of homes that just have blue tarps on for roofs in Puerto Rico. And when you're entering hurricane season again, it just hard to imagine. Here's what Holdhouse writes. He says, forecasters at Colorado State University released their extended range preseason hurricane forecast last Thursday, and it's not pretty. The combination of a weak La Nina in the Pacific Ocean and warmer than average waters in the Atlantic Ocean means this year's hurricane season is likely to be slightly more active than normal, with a greater than average chance of major storms hitting the U.S. mainland, Caribbean islands, and Central America. That's from Eric Holdhouse writing for Grist. What is the, let me ask Mike, what did you find from people who you're working with? As Bree mentioned, you get a chance to be pretty close to, you know, the locals. You're, mm-hmm. you're really working alongside people who live there. What is the mentality? I mean, is it fear? Is it sadness? Is it something else?
No, I don't think that at all. I mean, everyone that we worked with, everyone that we came in contact with was like super appreciative to have us there and just super, super happy to have us helping. I noticed, people, you could tell that there was some uncertainty for them. Like, I know Betsy, we met the woman who lived next door to our retreat, Margarita. Mm-hmm. She had just recently gotten power back in her home, like 6 months after she had gotten there. Like, it was wild.
And her family, to interject a bit, her family was there helping her rebuild her home.
Yeah.
And to be that close, she actually invited us in and showed us her home. And the storm blew out the walls of her house. And here her family, they're rebuilding it.
Yeah.
And it was very emotional for Michael and I just to be walking, introducing ourselves. She goes, no, come in. I want you to see. And it's hard.
I think last time I talked to Hilda on the phone with you, when you were in Puerto Rico, I could hear the emotion in your voice just seeing scenes like that. Is it still emotional for you?
Yes, just to hear them talking about this family, it just brings back memories. Of all the families that I encounter seniors sitting in the porch with houses with no windows and no roof, looking like hopeless. So yes, that brings back a lot of memory. It's still very hard for me to remember everything that I saw. And every time I talk to a member of my family, you know, and they tell me what's going on, it's very difficult, you know. And now, like you said, the hurricane season is coming, and basically what they have done with the electrical grid is not good enough. So, you know, they have done just patchwork. So if another hurricane goes to Puerto Rico, I can't even imagine what will happen to all the people there.
Betsy, you want to add to that?
I do, because Hilda mentions the electrical grid while we were there. Where we stayed in Patillas, it's a very mountainous area, a lot of mountains. And you hear helicopters, and you wonder why you're hearing helicopters. Well, you look up, and they're carrying the electrical poles. And they're placing them in the position within the mountains. The mountains have all these electrical poles, but you can't access them because of the area it's in. And it takes helicopters to bring in what they need to get that electric power back. It was profound to see these helicopters. Until this day, I heard a helicopter the other day, and I thought of Puerto Rico. I will always think of a helicopter differently because of that. I believe when we flew into San Juan, and San Juan, of course, is the capital, the cruise liners are back, it needs to be up and running because Puerto Rico relies on tourism. But as you leave San Juan and you get into these mountains and you see the devastation that still exists, they need more help. They do need help.
Mike, what did you, I asked Bree the same question, I want to hear from you. What did you expect to see and experience there, given everything that you had read, and whether it was in American media or elsewhere, and then how did that compare with what you did see in Puerto Rico?
Well, I wasn't really sure what to expect. Like you said, information had kind of petered out, so I wasn't really sure just the level of devastation that was being felt there still. But I remember specifically, like, as we were flying into San Juan, you look out the window and you can see, like, in the more residential areas, you just see all the blue tarps over where people's roofs used to be. And I think at that moment, like, before I even got off the plane, I was like, okay, I know, I have an idea of what I'm about to be dealing with here.
When you see that picture, is it hard to even contemplate that we're going back into another hurricane season and what that might do to an island like that?
It's going to be devastating. Again, like, I don't know. I don't know how the people of Puerto Rico are going to do it.
Well, let me just read. This is from John Morales, who's a meteorologist with NBC6 Miami and a former lead forecaster for the National Weather Service in San Juan. He writes for Grist about how people are feeling now. He says, I think there's a big difference in mood. For South Florida, it's resignation. But for Puerto Rico, it's dismay. Puerto Ricans are and will still be actively dealing with the aftermath of Maria when the 2018 hurricane season gets underway. It's nearly impossible to wrap your head around the possibility of a new hurricane strike on the island, given what they've seen. There is a good deal of post-traumatic stress. Being forced to think about the upcoming season is borderline horrific. That's from John Morales. What was the mentality that you're hearing from families there? I know you've got contacts there, Hilda. You know, certainly people are remarkably resilient and can be optimistic. But I wonder how, you know, sort of the mix of emotions you're hearing about.
Well, they are very concerned because they have not recovered completely from what happened. And just to think that there could be another hurricane, it is devastating. I mean, even the families that are coming here, they are coming, and you should see them. They come in and they are crying because they have not been able to get over the trauma of that hurricane. It was that bad.
This is Yvette Sosa, a journalist who works for Telemundo Puerto Rico, who wrote for Grist the following just a couple of days ago. Quote, Puerto Rico is not ready for another hurricane. We still have blue roofs on hundreds of houses all over the island. We have municipalities that still do not have electricity, and people in those areas are now getting desperate. Puerto Ricans, including myself, are so worried about what would happen here if another storm comes our way. I can't even tell you. And being a U.S. territory, we cannot understand why help is taking so long. That's Yvette Sosa, a journalist with Telemundo Puerto Rico. This is, again, not meant to be, I've said this before in covering this storm, this is not meant to be a political question, but it is about government service. So let me go around the table. Hilda, when Yvette Sosa says, we cannot understand why help is taking so long, is it a sort of a mix of feelings on government service? Do some understand the complexity of this? Is there mostly frustration? What are you hearing?
People are frustrated. People are angry. As well as I am, and I was when I was in Puerto Rico, we cannot understand because we are American citizens and we are treated less than second-class citizens. I mean, the government in New York have been doing more in Puerto Rico than the federal government. And I mean, that is unbelievable to me. I don't know how people can go to sleep at night and not think about what the families in Puerto Rico are facing.
Betsy, what do you think of what's going on now?
Evan, my experience was a very humanitarian service trip. So my response is that your question has so many layers to it. And if everyone could do something, it would make a tremendous impact overall. People in Puerto Rico, they are definitely struggling. I have sent my family money. I, through Ibero, am giving my clothes. And beyond that, when I got back from Puerto Rico, I reached out to an organization in Brooklyn, New York, called the Sato Project, and the Sato Project helps abandoned and the neglected animals that are left behind. So a Sato is a street dog, and there are many on the island. There's always been, and it's just gotten worse. For me, I am not going to stop after my service trip, and I haven't. I'm going to continue by connecting with people like Hilda, by connecting with people through the Sato Project. One thing, too, and I am going to put it out there, our island of Puerto Rico is a very Christian, spiritual island. They need prayer. And I do ask that, and I have to put that out there because that is one thing that we did a lot of when we were there with the locals. There's a lot that can be done. I just ask people to really look within themselves to find the peace that they can do.
Can I assume that it needs prayer and action?
Yes, absolutely. That's a fair assumption of it.
Okay.
I like that.
I don't want to put the community in the position of thinking, well, I prayed for them.
Right.
So I'm going to Wegmans.
No. But also, your question had many layers. We can all do something. We can all do something.
Well, that's part of the point of this hour is, especially people in privilege, thinking about the people who are suffering there and what can be done. We're talking about the aftermath of Maria almost 7 months after. This is day 201 after Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. And we're just 6-8 weeks away from the next hurricane, to the start of the next hurricane season. And that is an island that is still struggling in many, many ways. And our community, as you heard from Hilda Rosario Escher earlier this hour, has hundreds of families from Puerto Rico who are now here. They're struggling occasionally with language, certainly with transportation. They're struggling with security deposits on new housing. And you can get in touch with the Ibero American Action League. Hilda she's paying for Uber rides out of her own pocket. She's an amazing woman. You're an amazing woman, so I'm just going to say that. But the community, to Betsy's point, can do something. Sometimes it's financial, sometimes it's time. The students who are here, Michael and Bree from SUNY Geneseo, just gave a week of their time, and we're going to talk to them more in our second half hour about what they experienced and what's happening in Puerto Rico right now. Also want to tell you about what's coming up on Wednesday, a couple of performances of La Gringa, and who can tell us about that here? Is Betsy, is that with Livingston County Cares?
That is through SUNY Geneseo, and it is a play, and this is totally, because I just saw the poster and I'm going. It's this week, I believe.
It's Wednesday.
April 11th,
okay,
right?
I've got information here, so why don't I just go ahead and read this here, because this is another way that they're trying to raise money. SUNY Geneseo, of course, Livingston Cares is sort of works in conjunction with SUNY Geneseo, not funded directly by SUNY Geneseo. That's correct.
Correct.
Okay. But SUNY Geneseo wanted everyone to know that on Wednesday, you got two different performances. One's at 10 a.m. and one's at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at SUNY Geneseo in their Wadsworth Auditorium. They're bringing their production of the comedy La Gringa to SUNY Geneseo. The comedy production is about a young woman exploring her identity. The woman, Maria, was raised in New York and travels to Puerto Rico in search of her family and cultural roots. And while there, her visit unfolds into comic situations and, well, some misunderstandings. Tickets $10, and all profits from the play and everything earned through an auction as well will be donated to Livingston Cares, assisting with the relief efforts in Puerto Rico. So these are just a couple of ways that you can help this week, right now. And when we come back, we're going to talk more to Mike and Bree about what they experienced in Puerto Rico. Betsy's got some thoughts to share as well. They were there just recently. Hilda Rosario Escher is here, president of the American Action League. And you can call the program with questions or comments as we talk Puerto Rico and true healing going forward. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Coming up in our second hour, the White House recently convened a listening session on violence in video games. President Trump is worried that mass shootings have violent video games at the root. Is he right? What does the research say? And speaking beyond video games, let's talk about board games and entertainment we create for kids. Should it be more values-based, educational? Would it sell if we made that shift? We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bree Pollard and Mike Wall are both seniors at SUNY Geneseo who spent a week recently in Puerto Rico. And, you know, Mike and Bree, why don't you tell me what a day was like working in the southern part of the island? How did you film most of the time?
Well, a lot of what we did there was roof work, repairing and building roofs. And as we mentioned before, a lot of the roofs there are either concrete or corrugated metal. Which is a lot different than what we're used to here. So, for example, I remember one of the bigger jobs we did is we poured a concrete roof for this lovely family in Batillas. And I guess, I don't know what to say. Like, it was definitely... Well, Bree, did you did some roof work while you were there too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We sealed roofs too, like made them waterproof them, and laid some of the sheet metal. But yeah, roof work was generally what we did. We also we dug some drainage canals for churches and things of that nature.
Did you have a lot of experience before you went there on roofing?
Yeah, actually, me and my father, who actually went with me on the trip, he owns a construction firm, so I had worked for him in the past, and I had experience in trade and construction industry, so it was I was used to it.
Okay.
I guess.
What about you, Bri? What was an average day for you like in Puerto Rico?
I mean, it definitely depended on the day what jobs we were doing. Some jobs we were doing like painting projects, like Mike said. Other jobs were more they're larger scale, like the roofs. We dug a trench that took a few days actually.
Very long time.
Yeah, large trench. So. It definitely depended on the day, and then we always ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner with the locals, which was a really amazing experience. Mm-hmm. And they were so appreciative of us being there. So we always had time to like cool down and relax during the day as well.
Food is its own story everywhere you go, country to country, and there are different cultures and traditions. How would you describe the food culture there, Bree?
One of the best experiences was actually having the chance to actually eat like local food, because they did cook for us for every meal. So mm-hmm. that was awesome. Always rice and beans on the side. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a big thing. But it was delicious. The food was amazing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mike, what were your thoughts on the food?
I mean, I loved it. We never ate a meal alone. Like it was always like laughter and just sharing stories from the day and just getting to know the people around you. It was really wonderful.
Hilda was nodding along with some of the comments on food. Even when you were there, much closer to the aftermath of Maria, is it still a communal experience when people are suffering? Does food bring people together in Puerto Rico?
Oh, absolutely. Even here, we any time that there is a gathering, there is always food. So that is very important for us in Puerto Rico. When the National Guard, I would see families that were cooking with like two burners stove, you know, that people use for camping because they didn't have the electricity. And even then, they would be sharing the food with the workers there.
Arroz con habichuelas?
Arroz con pollo, arroz con habichuela, y carne.
But usually arroz con something.
Yes, there is always rice and beans. If there isn't rice and beans, that's not a meal.
Betsy, were there any meals that stood out to you just for maybe the community, the fellowship that you found there?
Dinner time dining was fun. We actually went out to a couple local restaurants. The folks ate mofongo and explored with bacalao. That was really fun, yes.
And, you know, again, for our listeners who are just kind of trying to envision what's going on there, there's going to be some who are just happy to hear that local restaurants, some, are open. What was the scene like there?
Very lively for mm-hmm. the places. Most of them ran on generators, and that is true. Wow. We went to Ponce, which is about an hour, 15 minutes away from us, and they even ran on generators in Ponce. Where we stayed, our building had a generator because we had the refrigerator in our building. Propane was used to cook. And lots of ice. Mm. So where we did stay, yes, it was beautiful, but it was run on generator. And when I mean beautiful, we slept on cots. It was bunk beds with cots. It was a cement building. It wasn't a hotel or anything of that nature. And we had no power other than the generator.
Well, let me ask the students, for our listeners who are hearing Bree and Mike describe the work they did, digging trenches, doing roof work, spending spring break there. That is a really heartening picture. For those who are cynical about your generation, it's good to keep reminding them of the great work that your generation has been doing to help out, to do a lot of the physically active work there. Was it part of school structure? Was it something that you volunteer your own time for? And will you go back? I'll start with you, Mike.
Yeah, you volunteer your own time for it. It comes right out of our pocket, like Betsy said. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I would definitely do it again. I'd definitely go back. It was the most enriching way I could have ever spent a spring break, honestly.
Did you meet people there who you will stay in touch with?
I hope I do stay in touch with everybody that I met there, yeah. The people who ran the retreat, our translator, Angel, he was wonderful. He was with us at all times. He was great. Yeah, I really hope I get to see these people again.
How's your Spanish?
It's okay.
You're about to try, but you know, in the brain, he's working it out. I can see it, having just got back from Spain myself.
Yeah.
You want to be able to start thinking in Spanish, and it takes a long time to get there. And everyone speaks, you have to always say, más despacio, por favor.
Más despacio, por favor.
Look at Hilda. You speak quickly when you speak English, Hilda.
I do.
No, I admire you. Bree, how is your Spanish?
It's okay. Not the best, honestly.
And for you, will you go back and kind of take me through what ended up convincing you to go there and how that came together for you?
So I've always done volunteer work at Geneseo, but it's never been like big projects. Mm-hmm. And being a senior at SUNY Geneseo, I'm never going to have like a week of spring break really to ever like donate my time. And I feel like I have friends that have had such positive experiences doing these types of trips that it was just a great opportunity for me to also have a great experience in such a different culture as well. So that's why I chose to do it. For obviously like other reasons such as helping their community, which was an amazing experience as well. Yes.
Okay, and do you, honestly, I mean, I kind of joke about the Spanish and we're having a little fun with you, but does it make you want to learn more? Does it make you want to be a polyglot, someone who can travel and really kind of understand and speak?
Yes, of course. Yeah, that would have been, I mean, we did have our translator, Angel, and then Betsy speaks fluent Spanish, so we really didn't have any issues with communication, but I still would have loved to, like, understand, like, the inside jokes and really, like, understand their culture more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I spent a semester in Argentina, so I had, like, a little bit of, like, that Spanish, living in a Spanish-speaking country experience, but I was, like, it was still, like, nerve-wracking. It had been a while. Like, the dialect's always different. And I was like, oh, I'm not as good at this as I thought.
And also interesting, Betsy, Español in Argentina, Español in Puerto Rico, Español in España.
Diferente.
Tres idiomas.
Sí.
No perfectamente juntos.
No.
There's some serious differences in practice and the way they communicate, isn't it?
And it's so because I was raised in Rochester, New York, so for even me to go to Puerto Rico and speak Spanish, they know where I'm from. So we've got a lot of going on here, yeah.
But probably, Hilda, there's an appreciation for the effort, I imagine.
Absolutely. I tell you, I am very thankful not only to them, but to the Rochester community that has done such a great job. You know, they have really helped out all the families that are coming to Rochester. So I have a lot of gratitude for this community.
Well, I want to ask our students who were just there, what do you think is most often either misreported or misunderstood about what's going on in Puerto Rico? I'll start with you, Mike.
I guess the situation in general, like you hear stats about like just how many people don't have electricity or access to potable water, but you don't really know until you get there and you see it firsthand. I think that's what struck me the most.
It's a great point because I open the hour with stats. And
to
some extent, stats we have to try to keep them in context. But you're right. When you're there and all of a sudden you're struggling
to
find actual drinkable water.
Yeah.
Bria, what about you?
Honestly, I feel like not that people forgot about Puerto Rico, but there's almost like a sense of that. Like I know one of my friends, she also went to Puerto Rico for spring break, but to like vacation there. And I told her that I was going on a service trip, and she said, like, what are you talking about? Like, nothing really is going on in Puerto Rico. And I was, like, so surprised because what we were taught was that they just left the relief stage, and now they're in the recovery stage. So it's definitely in a devastating sort of state. So a lot of people don't even know that much is going on there at all, which is shocking.
Yeah, Angela wants to know if the students on the panel talked to other young people in Puerto Rico about what they think about this presidential administration. Again, I know it's a political question, but did you have any conversations about
that? Yes, I actually did. our translator, Angel, he goes to college in San Juan. He was 28, I believe. And I did talk to him a little bit, not about necessarily the presidential election, but a little bit about how Puerto Ricans feel about America in general, kind of how they, like, the establishment kind of over Puerto Rico. And he just described that some people feel negatively towards America, whereas some people feel positively in the sense that we do help them in times like this. So it's definitely like a mixed feeling type of situation is what I gathered.
Mm-hmm. Mike, did you have any conversations about that?
Yeah, the same with Angel, more or less the same talk, yeah.
Okay, Betsy, any way that you could sort of characterize that? Again, not to make it political, but sometimes in these moments it feels that way.
It's Liliana is a young woman we met there, and Liliana is 21. I did ask her about what we saw on the news here versus about how they felt. And her consensus, her feeling is that while Puerto Rico is extremely appreciative of the help they've received, and this is Liliana speaking, they need more. It's not enough. So that was what you kept hearing. Yes, we're grateful for what we've gotten, but we need more.
Okay. And Hilda, what about you? What do you hear?
Well, Puerto Ricans, a lot of them feel very angry because the response from the federal government has not been enough. When you have people 6-7 months after a hurricane, a disaster like that, and they are still without drinking water and electricity. Come on. That's it. United States is the richest country in this world. And we send aid to many other different countries that, you know, that really have nothing to do with us. But to treat American citizens like Puerto Ricans are being treated, it's inexcusable. So I, as you can see, I get pretty emotional when I talk about it.
Well, let me read an email from a listener named David who says, Evan, I was struck by the fact that Puerto Rico could be going to replace some public schools with charter schools and vouchers. It seems to me to be fairly typical exploitation of disaster to transfer control of an important public institution to private for-profit hands. Naomi Klein wrote extensively about these typical exploitations of disasters in her book, The Shock Doctrine. Can you or your guests comment on that? It seems to me a very important part of the disaster, education, for the people of Puerto Rico. That's from David. Hilda, are you worried about the closure of schools or what's going to happen with public education in Puerto Rico?
I am. It's very disconcerting to me that they are closing schools, but yet they are going to open charter schools. That really does not make much sense to me. So somewhere in there has to be a lot of money involved. So I disagree with the notion of closing schools and then opening charter schools.
Okay. Betsy, any thoughts on David's email there?
We did get the chance to visit a local school, Casa de Niños Montessori Escuela, and these were students, I'm going to guess, range from 3 to 10 years old. Their classrooms, no electricity, no air conditioning. It was hot. They start their sessions, I'm thinking around 8:30, ended around 11:30, and then they're done. I'm not okay with schools closing. No, they need education. No, I find that very hard to accept.
And when you say 8:30 and then done at 11:30, is that a typical day? Was it just young
students?
Or is that a truncated day because of the circumstances?
It's because of the circumstances, because there's no electricity, there's no air conditioning, and these are cement buildings. Mm. And that is very stale air in those buildings, and it gets very humid. So it really becomes a safety issue, keeping your students in a building like that. And if it rains, they have to close the shutters. So that's even harder.
Yeah.
So that situation is tough.
Yeah. We're sitting here talking about schools that can only be open a few hours a day because
Correct.
Of the circumstances. We're talking about water. As I sit here drinking water out of a bottle, you know, it's this moment right here, me holding a bottle of water, just shows the disparity in our world. It's really gripping. And I wonder, Bree, if when you would see a school situation like that, did that difference sort of come into your mind how much we might take for granted?
Yes, I definitely agree with that. It's a lot different there. They, like you said, only operate a couple hours a day. But one thing I do want to point out a little bit, which I know there's a lot of notions that maybe like you would think like Puerto Rican schools, like they might not be like up to like American standards. Like I know a lot of people have that like American mentality, but the school we went to, the education system there was actually, it was great. And I've never even heard of any type of education where you start off, you have a group of 3-year-olds to 5-year-olds. And if they excel at 3, then they can move up to the next level. And if they excel at 5, then they would move up to the next level. And it's such like an understanding education system. So, yes, it was sad to see that they could only operate a few hours a day, but it was also a beautiful way of teaching kids.
So, in other words, the actual quality of the education itself looks very good to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Hilda, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah. You know, my niece is in second grade in Puerto Rico, and she is attending a school in Vega Baja, and it was... basically named as one of the best schools in Puerto Rico. And guess what? It's going to be closed. They are going to close that school. So I don't understand because I guess that they are going to bring a charter schools instead.
How does, I mean, I assume at second grade level, there's the child is probably not thinking too much about that, but what about her family? What do they think?
Exactly. The family is very upset. So what they are trying to do is find a different school, a private school, a Catholic school to send her to.
We just got a phone call from a longtime listener in Brighton who wants to send a donation to Ibero and will match up to $1,000, and she's encouraging others to donate right now. So we don't necessarily do I guess what I want to say is WXXI will have conversations in which we will highlight needs around the community. It is always up to listeners. We don't endorse because we can't. We always endorse when people want to send money to WXXI. But to the extent that if I tell you about this, what I'm just simply doing is letting you know that this is out there. So a person who's a longtime listener in Brighton just called to tell us that they're going to send you a check for $1,000 and they want other people to match it. So,
well, thank you very much.
Okay. And but again, that's just passing that along. And if they want to do that, if you want to get involved, it's up to you. Let's talk about how all of our guests, how you think if people bump into you and say, what can I do for Puerto Rico right now? What can people do in Rochester right now?
In Rochester, for work with the people that are coming here, volunteer to work with those families that are resettling here. Or basically, if they want to go to Puerto Rico and help out there, absolutely, that's always welcome.
Okay, so find a way to get to Puerto Rico to help, but there's probably different organizations that can help you with that. If you want to volunteer your time, your hierarchy of needs, 1, 2, and 3. If people can don't have money to donate, but they can donate time to help resettled families from Puerto Rico, you need what at the first, second, and third?
They can come to one of our offices. Where we have a lot of clothes that we need to basically to organize or come in. If you can teach English, we are offering English classes to the families that are coming. And if you have any employments, you know, that you know of, let us know, because a lot of the families here that are coming, they are looking for employment.
Okay. Call Ibero what number?
256-8900, extension 632. Okay. And you will get me directly.
Betsy Colon with Livingston Cares. Why don't you tell us if people want to maybe think about future efforts they can do in various ways, what would you tell them, having been there now yourself to Puerto Rico?
I believe Puerto Rico may need help with more skilled labor. Our group did go. We painted. We did a lot of patching, cleaning up, digging. There may be the need of skilled labor, though, running chainsaws, the heavier equipment to clean out some of that debris. And that's the first thought that came to mind. So it's really finding an organization to connect with to make that trip to Puerto Rico.
Okay. Agree with that, Mike, from what you saw?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, we did all we could, but we're unskilled laborers. Like, we're not engineers or like heavy equipment operators,
but you do sound like someone who's had some experience as working with your
personally,
father.
Personally,
and we're able to apply that.
Yeah, I was.
All right, so Mike and Bree give you a window into just taking, even as Mike says, unskilled. He's a lot more skilled than I am, but doing really important work there. Bree, what would you tell people?
Honestly, I think it might even start with something basic, like just making the Rochester community more aware of what's going down there. Like, I know the states in America tend to get more attention on these issues than Puerto Rico, and it would just be nice for people to know that these things really are going on down there and for an accurate depiction of the situation would just be able to get the community to respond more appropriately.
All right, 45 seconds, Hilda, and this is something that needs its own hour, so you got to cram it into a short answer. Does Hurricane Maria change any of the debate about statehood?
Yes.
You think so?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
What's going to happen?
Well, I think that there is more, Puerto Ricans are more aware of what's going on, and they will make a decision as to basically whether we want to be a state or not. And, you know, we will try to be a state, but it's up to the federal government to accept us.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for being here and for the work they're doing to keep us aware. Hilda Rosario Escher, the amazing president of the Ibero-American Action League. Hilda, thank you. It's always nice to see you. Really appreciate
your time. Thank you, and thanks to the Rochester community for all their assistance.
You got it. You can find Hilda and all the families who need that help who've resettled to Rochester, hundreds of families from Puerto Rico, at the Ibero-American Action League. And from Livingston Cares, a couple of students from SUNY Geneseo, Bree Pollard and Mike Wall, done really great work, and admire both of you. Thanks for the work that you've done and for sharing the story here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And Betsy Colon helping lead that work there. Really appreciate it as well. Thank you for being here and for sharing your stories as well, Betsy.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. More Connections coming up.